This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Connor is off today. He has play-by-play and analysis duty tonight for the game. He'll be in the booth. My name is Jesse Rogers with you here as we are every Saturday. It's White Sox Weekly, 2 hours of baseball conversation leading into our pregame show. White Sox and Tigers tonight from the South Side. Tarik Skubal, the favorite to win the American League Cy Young, is on the mound for the Tigers. He'll take on Kai Bush. The White Sox looking to rebound after losing yesterday 5-2. Kind of same old story, right, with the White Sox. They hang in there, decent starting pitching, don't score a lot, and the bullpen kind of gives it away late. That was a 2-2 game until late, but the Tigers win 5-2. The White Sox now 31-98. And again, it's going to be a tough task to avoid loss number 99 on the season when Tarik Skubal takes the mound for the Detroit Tigers. He's really had a breakout year. He's been an all-star and likely the Cy Young winner at this point, at least. We still have a month to go. Again, my name is Jesse Rogers, sitting in for Connor McKnight. Love to talk some baseball with you. Yeah, we will start with the White Sox, but we'll open it up to everything going on in the world of baseball, including the pennant races, the awards. Speaking of Cy Young, we'll go through some of the awards as well. Coming up, we've got a month to go. Very interesting races in some categories. The most interesting might be the National League Rookie of the Year. We'll get to all of that with one of my colleagues. Jeff Passan will join me at the top of the hour to go through the pennant races, to go through potential award winners. We'll do all that at 4 o'clock. And then at 4:30, another colleague of mine, Kylie McDaniel, he is our prospects expert at ESPN. He will join me to preview the professional debut of Hagen Smith. That's tonight for Winston-Salem Class A, taking on the Baltimore Orioles Class A team. Smith was the fifth pick in the draft, the first-round pick of the Chicago White Sox. A very highly anticipated debut for him coming up tonight in Aberdeen, Maryland. So we will talk to Kylie McDaniel about that, and you will hear from Brian Bannister, director of pitching for the White Sox. We'll do that in the 4:30, segment there. And then at 5, you will hear in its entirety Chris Getz, the general manager of the White Sox, as he met reporters yesterday before game one of the series. He covered basically everything you'd want to hear about, the managerial search. That's in the early stages. Hagen Smith's debut and a whole host of other things, including some of the issues the White Sox have had all year long at the plate. 312-332-3776 is the number. Write that number down. Give me a ring. Open phone lines throughout the show, including when I have Jeff Passan on, even if you have a question for Kylie McDaniel, our prospects guru, at 4:30. We will have phone lines open, and they're open right now. A couple segments to talk to you on. 312-332-3776. Are you going to keep an eye on a single-A game tonight? I mean, it is the number 5 pick in the draft, if not the best pitcher available, certainly right there with Chase Burns, but most people consider Hagen Smith the best pitcher available at that moment, and the White Sox grabbed him. They've done well with pitchers in the draft, specifically left-handers. We know that. Garrett Crochet, Chris Sale, we can go through some of the names. So let's see how they develop and use Hagen Smith as he makes his debut tonight after a little time off from, after the college season finished up. So I'm curious if you will keep an eye on a single-A game. It's not often you want to know what's going on in a single-A game, but in this case, I think you do. 312-332-3776, the phone number. So that's my first question. Are you interested in this guy's debut tonight as the White Sox try to continue this rebuild? And it certainly seems like pitching is going to be a big part of it, and they've got to figure out the hitting side. And that is something, as we move on to the next topic here, that is something that Chris Getz has talked about. This is a team and an organization that hasn't developed enough hitting. It was only a couple of years ago, thought there were too many hitters and not enough positions for them. Remember, where are we going to play Andrew Vaughn? Because Jose Abreu was still doing things pretty well at that time. Where's Gavin Sheets going to fit in? He was an up-and-coming left-hander. And then, of course, they signed Benintendi and Robert and Eloy and Mancada. Of course, injuries played a part, but now there's not enough hitting. It's just a few years ago that there was not enough positions for these guys. Guys had to sit and ride the bench. But at this point, the team is, and the organization is kind of void of hitting. And that's something they are certainly going to dive into. It seems like the pitching part, the infrastructure is there. When you consider what Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz have done, it sounds like they have a plan. And now they've got to come up with a plan on the hitting side. So I want to kind of get your thoughts on that as, you know, previewing what Chris Getz said to reporters yesterday afternoon about the managerial search. They're still in the very early stages. And of course, now there's competition. The Mariners are going to be looking for a manager. If they don't stick with Dan Wilson, there will be other openings as well. But the White Sox made the first move and are getting extra time to kind of figure out exactly what they want in a candidate and then go out and do some interviews potentially next month. They really haven't started that process. They're still writing down the sort of attributes they want out of a new manager. Curious what you want to see out of a new manager in this particular moment, right? This is not a manager that's taking you from point B to point C. This is obviously point A to point B, and it's going to be for a little while here. So I really think that they need to hone in on somebody for that. And like Brandon Hyde or Torrey Lovello, if that manager can grow with a young team and take the team from point A to point B, and you like what you're seeing, then you continue on with them. Like, you don't hire a manager thinking we're going to get rid of him as soon as we start to grow our team. You hope that that's the long-term answer. If he's not, he's not. But you hope that that's the case. But in the meantime, the immediate concern is what kind of a manager do you want with this rebuilding team? You know, not to rehash Pedro Grifol's time here in Chicago, but I really thought this particular season he was a little bit miscast because I felt like he was a little bit too earnest for the job at hand. And the job at hand was kind of like starting over. And I really think coming off of last year, Pedro wanted to show that there was a better brand of baseball to be played, but you have to have the horses. And certainly the White Sox maybe don't have the horses. I thought the fit wasn't right this particular year with Pedro Grifol. So they go to Sizemore, has respect to the players, but obviously he's a short-term, interim thing. So what's the longer-term answer? And I think it has to be someone with patience, someone young to grow with. You know, the guys like the Brandon Hydes or the Torrey Lovellos of the past that took their teams from not just point A to point B, but continued on. But you have to start with that whole idea of a young team that needs to grow, needs to learn how to win. All those things, I think, are going to be interesting when it comes to hiring the next manager. And, you know, is he going to have a hitting background? I asked Getz that yesterday. He said certainly that's something we'll look at. Like, I mean, I don't think they're going to hire a current pitching coach, for example, just because they need to advance the ball in the hitting side of things. And they've already done pretty well on the pitching side. So that's the big question. Is it going to be a successful former hitter that takes over? I don't think that's going to be the number one attribute. But someone that has a position player background with some hitting experience as a hitting coach, as a player, something to bring to the table from the hitting side of things, as that's been a problem. Now, right now, you'd have to assume Ethan Katz stays on. Right. I mean, that's, you know, sometimes pitching coaches can survive different regimes and managerial changes. Katz has already done it a couple times. So, you know, that's a question mark. We don't know for sure. But I would think between Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz, that part is set unless Katz wants to move on. You just don't know. So it is about the hitting side of things. And it just hasn't worked out, whether it be young hitters developing or lack of development or players they've gone out and acquired. That hasn't worked either. You know, they haven't really had a career year out of anybody in the last couple of years, though. Certainly Luis Robert was really good last year when he was healthy, not so much this year. Again, 312-332-3776 is the number. My name is Jesse Rogers, sitting in for Connor McKnight. He'll be in the booth with Len Casper tonight as the White Sox take on the Tigers. Kai Bush will be on the mound. Our executive producer here, Brendan Riley, producing the show, and he'll have the pregame show for you later on. Kevin Zipak as well. 312-332-3776. Again, the phone number, phone lines are open. Star Wars fans, join us at the ballpark on Friday, August 30th for Star Wars Night at the Park. Receive a Star Wars-themed Garrett Crochet bobblehead when you purchase a specially priced ticket, and be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. So there's a couple of questions on the table for you. What are the attributes you want to see in the next manager of the White Sox? And should it be tied to where the team is right now? I mean, I think it'd be kind of silly, you know, just Terry Francona. Like, that's kind of silly to go hire Terry Francona right now, in my opinion. In my opinion. You probably want someone young to grow with. You probably want someone, and I just threw that out there because I was thinking of a veteran manager that's out of the game. I don't even know if he wants to get back in. But, you know, it's to fit the moment, it's probably someone young that maybe relates a little bit more to younger players because he's still young, not far from removed from the game maybe, that kind of thing. But I don't know. I'm asking you, what are the attributes you want to see in the next White Sox manager? And the next question, of course, will you have an eye on Class A, Winston-Salem, and Higgins Smith's debut tonight? Why not? Why not? The number 5 pick in the draft starts his pro career. Who knows? Maybe he's next. He's the next star, and this will be the start of his career, and maybe you want to keep an eye on it. So those are the questions right now. We'll talk to Jeff Passan about the pennant races and award season. That's coming up at 4 o'clock. But right now, phone lines open, 312-332-3776. Jesse Rogers with you on White Sox Weekly on the White Sox Radio Network. Looking forward to my conversation with my colleague Jeff Passan from ESPN. He's coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to talk pennant races and awards. And one of the questions I'm going to ask him, because no one is talking about Marcell Ozuna's year in the National League. Now, I don't think he's going to overtake Ohtani in home runs, but he's within striking distance of doing so. Ohtani hit his 40th last night, walk-off fashion, a grand slam. But think about this. Marcell Ozuna could win the Triple Crown in the National League and not win the MVP. In fact, I would almost be positive he would not win the MVP, that they would give it to Ohtani. Not they, but us writers. I have a vote in these things. I think they would give it to Ohtani, even if another guy wins the Triple Crown, because Ohtani's already gone 40-40. He's probably going to go 45-45. Now, Marcell Ozuna is, three home runs, I think, behind Ohtani. So to overtake him, obviously, Ozuna would have to go on a little bit of a run here, and Ohtani would have to get cold. But he's within striking distance of the Triple Crown, and I don't think he has a shot in hell of winning the National League MVP. I love those little debates. And then I mentioned this earlier, the Rookie of the Year. In the American League, it's kind of boring. In the National League, there's a ton of good rookies. A ton of good rookies. Not so much in the American League. I mean, it's just how it fell this year for whatever reason. So we'll talk to Jeff about all that. And then I think the pennant races are fascinating. I know here in Chicago, that's not going to be a conversational piece when it comes to the White Sox or anything. But certainly around the league, it's really fascinating. Everybody's bunched. The elite teams are bunched. The wildcard teams are kind of bunched. It's anyone's guess. It really is. 312-332-3776, the number, if you have a thought on that. I think it's a fascinating year in baseball. I still like the Phillies to win it all. They were the early, obviously, best team in ball. And I think they're going to end up with the best starting staff again. They had it very early on. They had some injuries. Ranger Suarez got hurt. Nola and Wheeler have a lot of miles on their arms the last couple of years. But I think, you know, they'll take their foot off the gas a little bit. They already have. And win the division and rest up. And I still think the Phillies are going to win the World Series. They've been on a mission basically since Bryce Harper got there. And obviously bad taste in their mouths after last year's loss, game 6 and 7 at home to the Diamondbacks. Hagen Smith, what do you think, folks? His professional debut tonight for Class A Winston-Salem They'll play at Aberdeen, 6:05 Central start. Same basically, you know, time the White Sox are getting going with the Tigers. But I'm sure if you're a diehard Sox fan, you will keep an ear and an eye on Hagen Smith, who is already a top 30 prospect, basically, in baseball. He hasn't even picked up a ball and thrown one professionally yet. He's a top 30-esque prospect. We'll talk to Kylie McDaniel from ESPN, our prospects guru, at 4:30. He can touch 100 on his fastball, Hagen Smith. They all can these days, right? Very deceptive slider from the left side. That's always interesting. Some scouting guys have mentioned Chris Sale to me, Carlos Rodon, kind of a mixture. If he's any of those guys, we'll take it, right? 83-87 on his slider. He's got a great split, can cut the ball as well. He'll be really devastatingly tough against left-handed pitching. Left-handed hitting was a finalist for the Golden Spikes Award. Just a real good-looking prospect. I wasn't sure if they should go pitching or hitting. Just to be honest, I was at the draft in Texas, and I thought they might take Jack Caglione, but they decided to go with the pitcher, and they even said it afterwards. We've had success specifically with left-handed pitchers, and you never know what you're going to turn into. The Sox might trade Garrett Crochet and turn that into a bunch of good prospects. Not that you're thinking about trading Hagen Smith already, but the point is maybe drafting to your strength and then seeing how it all plays out is the right move. If you're really good with pitchers, you turn Hagen Smith into something great. Hopefully you keep him, and he's a long, lifetime White Sox player. But if not, you can turn him into something. That's a possibility with Crochet, who's got a couple years left before free agency. So very much looking forward to just what Hagen Smith has in his arsenal. I mean, it's his first start since college, so it'll be very interesting to see what he brings. 312-332-3776, the number if you want to chime in. Now, Kai Bush starts tonight. I loved his outing last time out. It really did. He's been out there three times for the White Sox so far, so this will be his fourth start. Each start has felt a little bit better. The numbers say so as well. He debuted on August 5th, went four innings, gave up three runs, five walks, three Ks against Oakland. Then against the Yankees, he hung in there. 4 2/3, six hits, seven walks, though. Gave up just two runs. That's pretty tough to do against the Yankees. In and out of trouble there. Six hits and seven walks in 4 2/3, but only gave up two runs. But last time out, Kai Bush was really good. Really good. 2-0 loss to the Astros, a good hitting team. He went six innings, gave up four hits, one run, three walks, five Ks. And he did give up a home run, but just a really solid start last time out. And you're facing a Tigers team, and you're at home. The Tigers not exactly the best hitting team in the league. So who knows? Maybe Kai Bush can match Tarek Skubal pitch for pitch, at least for a while. I mean, the White Sox have done that for a lot of this year. Flexen did it yesterday, was able to match the Tigers pitching early in that game. But then again, the bullpen gave it away. Sox are down 2-0. They tied 2-2 and then gave up three late to the Tigers. Final there was 5-2. So this is game two of the series. It's a four-game wraparound series, and that'll finish a complete week in Chicago for the Tigers, who played on the north side against the Cubs earlier in the week, and now they're on the south side against the White Sox for the weekend, and then they conclude the series on Monday night. A night game getaway day on Monday. Take advantage of one of our best offers this summer. Get one ticket and two beers to select games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. That's again, whitesox.com/brews. 312-332-3776. The number if you want to jump on as we continue to talk about the White Sox, the pennant races, award season, and a little bit more about Hagen Smith. What did you think when they drafted him? Like I said, I thought maybe go hitter. That's been a weakness for the White Sox. But look, this is a long-term thing, and you don't know what that long-term plan is. If they do trade Garrett Crochet for a bunch of hitters, well, now you got to kind of replace Crochet or that idea of a lefty. And I know they have some good pitching in the minors at Double A. The White Sox do, and we're going to see a few of those guys. I don't know about whether it be September or certainly breaking camp next year. I mean, they have certainly debuted a bunch of guys on the mound this year. But interested to see where exactly Hagan Smith fits into the long-term plan. Can he make the team out of spring training next year? I mean, college hitters and pitchers are as advanced as ever. They really are. I mean, especially the hitters, but the pitchers too. So it'll be interesting what this month or whatever, how many starts he's going to get, Hagan Smith, and then what exactly it looks like next year out of spring training. Can he make the team, especially if they trade Crochet, and there's a few openings there, but Jonathan Cannon's in the mix, Kai Bush is there. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Hagan Smith. But it'll be interesting to see him, I assume, at big league spring training camp next year. Can't say that for sure, but I would assume he'd get some time there and be around the big leaguers and start to learn his trade. Celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best valuable, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. All right, my pal and colleague Jeff Passan is going to join us as we pull back from just the White Sox conversation and look at the pennant races as well as award season. Jesse Rogers with you. This is White Sox Weekly right here on the White Sox Radio Network.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play AM, FM, HD, and app.
Join us at the ballpark next Saturday, August 31st, as the White Sox take on the New York Mets at 6:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans, 21 and older, will receive a Frank Thomas back-to-back MVP bobblehead presented by Binney's Beverage Depot. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Welcome back. Jesse Rogers with you, sitting in for Connor McKnight, and I'm very pleased to bring in a colleague and a friend who does great stuff at ESPN.com, on ESPN-TV, and radio as well. It is Jeff Passan, and he will be on Baseball Tonight tomorrow, 5 o'clock Central Time, as he is every week. Jeff, good afternoon. I just saw you tweet. Does that mean we have a no-hitter going on? Is that what's happening?
Yes. Bowden Francis, who is the reigning American League Player of the Week, and who, if you can identify what team he's on, I respect you as a baseball fan. But he's a right-hander for the Toronto Blue Jays. 8 innings, 110 pitches, 0 hits, and he is, you know, he's young, but he's not that young. He's like 28 years old. Let him go.
Let him
go. Don't do this. Stop it. Modern baseball. Just let people throw no-hitters when they have a chance.
Absolutely. 8 innings, 3 walks, 12 Ks, no hits. Jeff, as we discuss this, let me know if he goes out there for the 9th inning. That'll be very interesting at 100. And what'd you say, 11 pitches, I think it is, right?
I think that's right.
I actually, you know, you mentioned it here in Chicago. We're a little familiar with him. He pitched here last weekend, and he looked really good. So not shocking that he's, you know, I mean, I'm a little surprised he has a no-hitter after being Player of the Week and all that stuff, but he looked really good last week. And
he's against the Angels, you know, and some are a little easier than others.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, why don't we start with awards? Because, you know, Francis might tie a record, a no-hitter, right, so to speak. But I want to go through awards because I think this award season's fascinating. Let's start with something I brought up last hour. I think Marcell Ozuna could win the Triple Crown by a mile and still lose the MVP award because Ohtani's going to probably go 45 and 45. Now, Marcell Ozuna would have to go at least 46 to win the Triple Crown, but am I wrong? He's got no chance to win the MVP.
I don't think so. I think Marcell Ozuna is probably not only behind Shohei Ohtani, but behind Francisco Lindor, and you can make the argument behind Ketel Marte as well. Right now, I think it's probably Ohtani. But there's I wrote about Lindor this week, and I think there's a really good case to be made for Lindor. It's not just a wins above replacement case. It's a plays exceptional shortstop, both defensively and just as a leader out there. Hits really well, runs really well. He's a phenomenal all-around player. And he's out there every day, which is not to take anything away from Shohei Ohtani, who's, you know, probably the most incredible baseball player I've seen, certainly since Barry Bonds, maybe I've ever seen in my 20 plus years covering baseball. But you know, at the end of the day, reaching 40-40 like Shohei Ohtani did in like with like a week plus left in August, and seeing what he's going to be able to do after that, I don't care if he's only a designated hitter. It's still an MVP type season from Ohtani.
Yeah, we learned a couple things here in Chicago. We learned don't walk the guy ahead of Aaron Judge. We saw that on the south side a week ago. Now, that was intentionally. Yep. Last night, Max Muncy wasn't walked intentionally, but still a mistake. I'd throw every pitch down the middle against Max Muncy to avoid Ohtani, but it set up an incredible walk-off grand slam. Let me ask you about the 40-40 and maybe 45-45 and Acuna last year. How are we supposed to recalibrate the whole stolen base era that's upon us again? No matter what anybody does, whatever Ricky Henderson used to do is still going to be more impressive because the rules were different, the bases were smaller. But how are you how are you recalibrating it? Not that Ohtani's stealing, even if he stole 30 instead of 40, it would be impressive. But what's your take on that?
You know, Jesse, I'm also looking at the fact that it's harder to steal against catchers now than I think it was back then. I think catchers' arms have gotten just way better over time. And so the notion that this, that somehow right now, because the bases are bigger and because the distance between them is smaller, that lessens things. I don't know. I have trouble looking at anything in modern baseball being lesser because they're so talented, man, and they're so extremely good at what they do. And the knowledge is greater than it's ever been before. And the ability to extract like the ultimate in physicality out of a guy is at its apex right now. So I can't sit here and bemoan what's going on right now in terms of numbers guys are putting up because I think the ability to play in this environment, to succeed in this environment, is incredible. And it's harder than it's ever been before.
Fair enough. What do you think about sort of Ohtani adding this to his game? Is this kind of like, well, if I'm not going to pitch, I'm going to try to do something. You know what I mean? Like, the guy can do
anything. Honestly, it's always been there. He's always been really fast. I think he was just like, well, you know, I might as well show him that I can do something no one thought I was capable of doing, which is, it's kind of like the Ohtani way, is it not? It's sort of just the dude's MO. That's how he operates. He does things that people do not think that he is capable of doing, and he relishes those opportunities. And it's not even like an I told you so. It's almost like an I want to tell myself so, and I want to prove it to everyone else that whatever it is, like regardless of what it is that we don't think Shohei Ohtani can do, not only can he do it, but he can do it better than everyone else. It's like, honestly, it's kind of an obnoxious flex by him. like I'm so much better than everyone else. I'm going to find out what you do well and then do it well just to say that I did it well. Now, you can't do any of the other things that I do, but that's because you're not me. And right. That's where he is in his career right now. It's nobody is like him. Nobody can do what he does. And so we all just get to sit there and marvel and watch it and appreciate it. And it's a pretty cool thing.
Visiting with Jeff Passan for a few minutes here on ESPN 1000. So, okay, I don't think he's losing the MVP in the National League. He's got it wrapped up, in my opinion. In the American League, it seems like it's wrapped up.
Can I just say, you're no better than to wrap up MVP voting before August comes, man. Come on.
You just said he's toying with us. I mean, come on. He's going to win it. He's going to win it. I know you wrote about Lindor, but he's going to win it.
All right.
Let's go to the American League. That seems wrapped up as well. But you tell me the three guys with OPSs over 1,000, are they going to finish 1, 2, and 3, meaning in this order, Judge, Soto, Witt? Or does Witt overtake Soto and really, because of teammates or whatever, split the vote and Witt finishes second, which is amazing, that Bobby Witt is leading the Royals and could be right there with Judge and Soto in MVP voting?
Yeah, I got to be honest. I think Witt is 2 already.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, frankly, it's closer between Judge and Witt than it is between Witt and Soto.
Makes sense. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, but you still think this is Judge's to lose, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And you know, wins above replacement can try and tell me whatever it wants to tell me. At the end of the day, Aaron Judge is just so much better a hitter than everyone else right now. I mean, how do I go with anything otherwise? How do you argue with a guy whose slugging percentage is higher than the league-wide OPS? Like, that's the damning one to me right there. It's like, Aaron Judge is so good that his slugging percentage beats everyone else's on-base plus slugging. You want to look for a sign of dominance? You look at that. I mean, this is, you know, it's a historically great season that we're witnessing. And in any other year, Jesse, Bobby Witt is the MVP of the American League. He just so happens to be playing at a time when Aaron Judge is at his apex, and pretty darn cool to witness.
Yeah, I mentioned this on Baseball Tonight last week because I was talking to a few scouts, and this is the most obvious thing ever, but the plate coverage Aaron Judge now has is just amazing. I mean, take batting average for whatever it is, but he's hitting .332, and there's some meaning there. The way he's able to make contact, and whether it's out of the park or not, on anything at his knees these days, that was a vulnerable position. You know, big guys, that's a tough ball to get to if it's a pitcher's pitch at the knees. He's hitting pitcher's pitches at the knees.
Absolutely. He's hitting everything. And he also has the luxury, and we have to acknowledge this, he has the luxury of playing in Yankee Stadium. And playing in Yankee Stadium, it's a very friendly ballpark. But I don't care. If you stick Aaron Judge in any stadium in the world, he is going to be the best hitter there. Because that's what he is. He's the best hitter alive right now.
All right, let's move quickly. Cy Young, it's Tarek Skubal's in the AL. He's pitching tonight against the White Sox, right? You pretty much got that. In the NL, it's Wheeler or Sale, but probably Sale, right?
Yeah, probably right now, but we've seen that change, man.
Sure.
Like, you know, all it takes is a couple of blow-up starts and suddenly, or even one really bad start, and suddenly Chris Sale doesn't have the best ERA in the league. But Chris Sale's, like, his reemergence has been remarkable. And I don't know if you remember, I wrote about him in spring training, and, you know, I saw something different. But this? No. I mean, I don't think even he could have imagined it was going to be as good as it's been. And Atlanta has needed every last bit of it with the injuries that they've had this season.
Yeah, he is really leading the way. All right, American League Rookie of the Year is really uninteresting to me. Luis Gil, Willier Abreu, I believe that's how you pronounce the first name, right? Is it one of those two?
It's probably Colton Cowser at this point.
Or Cowser. You know, he dropped off a little bit, but right, Colton Cowser is, you think it's him?
Yeah, I think Cowser's probably in the lead right now, yes.
Okay. Again, not that interesting. National League rookies, for whatever reason, this is the year, right? This is
very
the year. What Jackson Merrill is doing, this is a very scientific late and close. He's got 1,000 OPS in games deemed late and close. I just started punching up numbers, and we know that run he had about 2 weeks ago. Just amazing. And what age he's doing it, and Churio at his age, where do you put the National League Rookie of the Year race?
Remember Paul Skenes?
Yes, and I haven't forgotten Shota Inaga. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good year. When I look at Jackson Merrill, Jesse, I see Freddie Freeman. Watch the swing, watch the plate discipline, watch the strike zone control, watch the bat control. I'm telling you, everything about him screams Freddie Freeman, and that's about as high of a compliment as you can give to a hitter. So I think Jackson Merrill is going to be a superstar, and you can argue that he already is a star. But beyond that, this year alone, I mean, I guess right now I'm leaning Skenes. I mean, I don't have a vote there, so I can't say for sure it's going to be Skenes. But what Skenes is doing, he's the best pitcher in baseball, man.
Right.
Like, that's it. I know he hasn't been up all year, so certainly that is an advantage for Merrill, but I look at teams and I see the best pitcher in baseball. So tough to say no to that.
And I know you like Jackson Churio as well. Have you seen what he's done since Yelich went down? I mean, he is OPSing over 900 since Yelich went down, moved up in the lineup. My yep. God. If you were voting, do you give extra credit to Merrill and Churio because of their ages? Like, does that go into your, all things being equal, I like this guy a little bit better because he's doing it 20, 21 years old?
Honestly, no, I don't.
Okay.
It's like, yes, it's impressive, but in terms of voting, I just look, okay, what did you do? What are the numbers? What's the production? Sure. And that to me is independent of age.
I mean, there are years where Mason Wynn would finish in the top three with the year he's having. And it's just an okay year. But this year, I mean, the National League rookies are just, it's just deep for whatever reason, Jeff. It's
funny looking back in April, it's like Schoch is a shoo-in. He's a lock.
Right.
He might not finish top three now.
No, I don't think he will. Not with the way Merrill's going. Skeens, obviously. And then there's one more spot. I don't think it's going to be him. His ERA is probably going to be in the threes, which, you know, in this group with the hitters and pitchers, it's just not that special. I want to stay on Churio and the Brewers. They've caught the Phillies. That is, or maybe the Phillies have caught them is probably a better way. They've backed
I was going to say, we need to figure out what direction we're going in right now.
But there's so many great storylines in the pennant races, and the fact that the Brewers have not missed a beat with Yelich going down and with trying to figure out, you know, their pitching staff. It's amazing what Milwaukee has done, but I don't think they're going to overtake the Phillies and get a bye. How do you look at the NL pennant race?
I mean, probably not, man. But at this point, like, do you put anything past Milwaukee? Like, I'm really impressed by the Brewers as an organization. They just do things well, man.
Yeah,
they scout well. They draft well, they develop well, they go for ceiling, but there's also floor there. It's just a really intelligently run organization that has found a lot of success on the margins, you know, with a guy like Tobias Myers, another guy who's going to be in NL Rookie of the Year voting and who by the end of the season could have some of the best numbers out of everyone there. And, you know, getting Frankie Montas and making some changes with him at the deadline. And he's got like a 2.4 ERA over four starts and the stuff looks really good. And, you know, fastball's up to like 98 now. So the Brewers, they operate well. They have cracked how to run a big league franchise on a budget and do it at a high level. And I'm not going to say that they are the model team by any means, but they are certainly a team after which others should pattern themselves.
And another one is the Cleveland Guardians. Let's move to the AL Central. Used to be the worst division in baseball. It's one of the better ones. I mean, yeah. The Royals are in your backyard. They might win the division. This is amazing. These three teams have 70-plus wins, including Minnesota. The Guardians seemingly are there every year. Now they have a rookie manager. He's going to win manager of the year going away. But is he going to win the division? How do you handicap the Central?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you count the White Sox as a big league team right now?
Trying to avoid loss number 99 tonight. So yeah, there are a bunch of wins that these Central teams have had with the White Sox for sure.
And that has been an advantage. You know, the Royals are 12-1 against the White Sox. Twins are, I believe, also 12-1 against the White Sox. So there are teams out there that are taking advantage of it. But the truth is, Jesse, win those games that you're supposed to, right?
Yeah.
Win those games that you're supposed to win. And then play 500 against everyone else, and you are a playoff team. And that's what, I mean, at this point, it looks like we're going to have three playoff teams out of the American League Central. Now, it'll be interesting to see how they match up against, you know, the Orioles and the Yankees out east, and what looks like it's going to be Houston out west. And, you know, are these teams that get almost instantaneously exposed as complete frauds because, hey, they piled up a bunch of their wins against the White Sox? Honestly, I don't think so. If Joe Ryan hadn't gotten hurt, Jesse, I think I might have picked the Twins to win the American League pennant.
Wow. They can hit.
They can really hit, man. And they have big arms at the back end of that pen. And I think Rocco Baldelli really knows his team. He knows his team's strengths. He knows what, like, what they are and what they should be and what positions to put guys in. Losing Joe Ryan stakes, though. Like, he is a very good pitcher.
I got two more things for you real quick, visiting with Jeff Passan, and we're running out of time. But I got to mention, when did the Arizona Diamondbacks become a model organization? I mean, it feels like it happened overnight. Do you see what they're missing in their lineup now after missing guys on the mound all year? Moreno, they call up a catcher, he's 14 for 41. They're missing Walker, they're missing Marte, and they just keep on scoring runs and winning games. When did Arizona become this model organization?
I think, you know what I like about the Diamondbacks, that when they saw that it was their time, they pushed, right?
Yep.
And here's the interesting part. Like, the pushes that they've made haven't been all that great. Like, Eduardo Rodriguez, who they signed for $80 million this offseason, hasn't produced all that much. Jordan Montgomery hasn't been very good. Corbin Carroll certainly regressed. But they're getting an MVP-type season out of Ketel Marte. Christian Walker is always consistent and always good. And they've had steps forward from guys like Jake McCarthy. Pitchers like Ryan Nelson who stepped up. Listen, I know that you might like the Arizona Diamondbacks coaching staff more than any coaching staff in baseball.
But there's
something to be said for that, isn't there?
Well, you know, I was messaging with one Mike Hazen just today, and I just said, wow, it's just amazing, you know, the guys you've brought up that have come through. And his response was, I think we have the best manager in the game. Now, of course, he's biased, but, Lovello is a very talented Philly guy, but he gets it done. He's gotten it done, you know? So you got to give him a lot of credit. Last thing real quick. Yankees and Orioles, I think it's going to be the Yankees. I think there's a little... I don't know, something with Baltimore's offense. There's a little Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with them, and I wonder if you see the same thing. I'm not as confident in Baltimore as I once was.
Yeah, and listen, there are people there who are seeing it who aren't quite as confident either. It's not so much the rotation necessarily, though. Their pitching staff is iffy. Beyond Corbin Burnes, and Corbin Burnes, by the way, has not been all that great. Beyond Corbin Burnes, they have Grayson Rodriguez on the injured list right now. They've already lost three other starting pitchers to Tommy John surgery. They went out at the deadline and got Zach Eflin, who's been good but is hurt, and Trevor Rogers, who got options AAA. So they're grasping at something right now. Here's the thing about the Orioles, though. They've got 5 weeks to figure it out. And that's the one thing I try not to minimize in situations like this when a team is struggling. Like, in the same way that I think that a team like Seattle or like San Francisco still has time to make a run at a postseason spot, like, I'm not saying at this point that anyone is necessarily out of it. I'm also not going to say that at the top of division. Like, the Orioles, we've seen how good they can be, man. And it would not surprise me to see them be that good again.
Absolutely. All right. Well said. Jeff, thank you for the extended time. 5:00 Chicago time tomorrow, baseball tonight. Safe travels, and I'll talk to you soon, pal.
Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one, pal.
All right. That's Jeff Passan. Does a great job at ESPN, ESPN.com, ESPN TV, and all over the place. Appreciate his time. We'll come back, react to that a little bit. We'll talk to another colleague of mine, Kylie McDaniel, our prospects guru, as we get set for Hagen Smith's professional debut. Kylie joins me at the bottom of the hour. This is White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers filling in for Connor McKnight on ESPN 1000, the White Sox Radio Network.
Captain Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers with you, filling in for Connor McKnight. He'll be with Len Casper in the booth tonight, as the White Sox take on the Tigers. Game two of a four-game series. Just talking to Jeff Passan about the awards that will be given out after the season ends. And Tarek Skubal is certainly the favorite for the Cy Young Award. He will face the White Sox tonight. So great test for them at the plate. White Sox fans, there's still time to win a one-of-a-kind experience this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own bobblehead. August winner will get to create their own custom bobblehead and get 20 bobbleheads to keep for themselves or to give out to friends and family. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. All right, coming up next, we preview the professional debut of the number 5 pick in the draft, Hagan Smith. He'll be doing it for Winston-Salem Class A tonight. Kylie McDaniel, a colleague of mine at ESPN, knows these prospects better than anyone. So he'll break down what we can expect out of Hagan Smith, not just tonight, but moving forward. Jesse Rogers with you on White Sox Weekly. Back in a moment with Kylie McDaniel. Stay tuned.
Recap the game. Cap and Jay here. Weekday mornings at 7.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers with you for another hour. And then it's White Sox baseball. The White Sox taking on the Tigers. Skubal versus Kai Bush, who's been sneaky good. Just a few starts so far for the White Sox, but really good one last time out against the Astros. Really kept the White Sox in the game. I thought he was really good. And so he'll take on the likely Cy Young winner in the American League tonight, Tarek Skubal. So we'll see if Bush can match him. I mean, the White Sox have had good starting pitching for the most part this year. It's just the bullpen has blown a bunch of games from it happened again last night. 312-332-3776 is the number. We're going to get to Kylie McDaniel in just a moment. He's our prospects guru as Hagan Smith makes his professional debut tonight. You know, look, if he was the last pick in the first round, maybe it'd be a little different. If he's the fourth pitcher taken, but this is a highly regarded prospect. Fifth pick overall in the draft, really, really high ceiling. So I think it's, you know, worthy of watching tonight, his debut. Before we get to Kylie, take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy select lower level tickets for $15 on all weekday games and $20 on all weekend games while supplies last. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. 312-332-3776. Again, the phone number, and do we have Kylie on the line? Kylie is ready. My guy, Kylie McDaniel, you saw him all over TV around the trade deadline, of course, the draft as well. Now he's on a beach somewhere, but I am bothering him because this young lefty can only make his professional debut once, and that's what we're going to see out of Hagan Smith tonight. Kylie, first of all, good afternoon. Are you taking some R&R after the trade deadline and the draft, my friend?
I am. Given how pale I am, the beach is not really for me. So I'm in my own version of that, which is my work hammock, which I have that hangs above my my work area in my office. It's very unique to my experience.
That's awesome. I expect you're already working on the 2025 draft. I mean, you do such a great job. Frankly, I'd love to talk to you about your – I mean, how do you keep track of all these guys?
It's funny because I get asked this question a lot, and to me it's like second nature, but I realized I started doing like a version of this in my early 20s, and I'm now in my late 30s. So I've been doing a version of this for almost 15 years, and I'm actually working on an article that's going to come out next week where I rank the players on Earth by their birth year, and I was just working on the youngest group of that. And so the youngest group of that is born in 2008. So it's the 2026 and in some cases 27 high school draft players and the international players that haven't signed yet. And I was just got off a call with a scout going through all the best international players that haven't signed yet. But a year from now, they could be in the top half of the top 100 of the professional players like Leo DeVries and Ethan Salas and Sebastian Walcott and some of these other guys were that signed either last January or the January before. So it's just one of those things where once you get a handle on one market, then you go the year back in the market and then you go to the international market. And then, you know, once they turn pro, you've kind of got a nice starting point when they're in, the low minors. And then because you have those guys, when they get older, you have a feel for the upper minors. And then obviously Hagan Smith, a guy I knew about when he was like 16, 17 in high school, he kind of popped. And then obviously I just kind of have that entire path all the way through, to the journey getting today to being in pro ball. And I imagine next year he'll be in the big leagues.
Well, let's talk about him, his debut tonight. First of all, you spent time in the front office. This might be minutia, but give me the time between the draft and today. What I don't even know what the date is, August 24th. Did you guys really map out exactly what highly touted players like this, high draft picks, should be doing? I mean, is it strategic when you decide to make his pro debut on it late in August like this? How does that work from the time they're drafted to this moment? I get asked that kind of stuff a lot.
Yeah, especially for pitchers. So I was in Atlanta the year that we took Kyle Wright, for example. And Kyle Wright was a guy that did weighted ball stuff, which was a thing that wasn't like expressly forbidden in our farm system at that point, but was not a thing that we encouraged as a team, even though there were certain people in the front office or player development that liked it or didn't dissuade people from doing it. It wasn't a thing that we encouraged. And that was a really big part of what he did at Vandy and what he had done in high school. And so we had to like go from not really having an opinion and not expressing anything about weighted ball training for, basically for guys to throw harder, to having to have an opinion because we're about to give this guy $7 million. And so if he's doing this, other people are going to want to do it. And if he can do it, they have to be allowed to do it. And if they're allowed, then do we say it's a good idea? Do we have a program or, a way that we would encourage them to do it? Some people have their own sort of pitching guru type. Some people don't. That's an example of when you take a pitcher this high in the draft, it sometimes reorganizes your priorities and the way that you plan these things. And that goes all the way down to how many innings do we have guys at a certain age throw in a year? How much do you increase it year to year? Is this guy unique in that maybe in some cases a guy has a TJ and so that changes the way you build him much, which Hagan Smith had one in high school actually, which is why he wasn't a huge draft prospect out of high school, is because he had a TJ before the draft, so he just wasn't really seen as a guy that would get paid a lot of money in high school, so he went straight to college. And so everyone gets their own individual plan, but in some cases, I think Hagan Smith may be one of those guys, he makes you sort of edit the way that you approach pitching in general because he sort of confronts you with a question you haven't had to answer as an organization yet, and with a new GM, you can sort of edit some of these things and adjust the way you approach developing pitchers, which every team has their own specific opinion about how to do that.
Very interesting. Visiting with Kylie McDaniel from ESPN. I wanted to start talking about Smith a little bit more. And I was going to bring up comps and it reminded me of something else that our listeners, I think, would be interested in. And the idea you mentioned being in Atlanta's front office, that some front offices don't like comps and some do. Mike Rizzo, no problem with comps. Mike Elias of Baltimore, don't tell me about comps. And what we're talking about is like this pitcher reminds you of so-and-so. What's the argument against comps? Because you don't want to put that in the executive's head. What's the argument against saying this pitcher reminds me of so-and-so?
Well, so the very simple argument for is if you're talking to someone that works in baseball that hasn't seen the player before or isn't familiar with them, you can immediately get them 80% of the way there by just saying a name. So like with Hagan Smith, you could say Chris Sale or Crochet and you immediately, which, conveniently they were both White Sox. You then immediately go to, major college, low slot lefty with big stuff that could be a frontline guy. Like you immediately get there and that's all true. And so you then you can then say, oh, it's like Sale or Crochet, but he's had a TJ and maybe the sort of stuff plus model, something we can talk about with Hagan Smith, maybe don't love the stuff that much. The command to get the pitch in the strike zone isn't quite as good as those guys at the same stage, but has, sort of similar qualities otherwise. The argument against it would be, and I run into this a lot with like more casual fans, like if somebody, a friend is asking me for the fantasy draft, like, hey, of the top 10 picks in the draft, which one should I get? And I'll be like, oh, this guy's sort of like this player that went really high in the draft that didn't work out in the big leagues. And they'll think, oh, you mean this guy that was just drafted isn't going to work out in the big leagues. I'm like, no, I mean, at the same age, they were both seen as top 10 overall picks that everyone thought would succeed. And then one of them didn't. This guy that's now 18 may also succeed, may not. We'll see. And so it ends up what happens is the sort of less up to date or the less educated somebody is about baseball relative from being a casual fantasy player to a current GM is they then take everything about that player and put all of that on top of this young player that hasn't done anything yet.
Right.
And it can then, like you're saying, warp the expectations to where everyone's, oh, this guy went to Stanford and has a good curveball. He's like Mike Messina. And so a dumb fan will hear, oh, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. It's like, no, he has a good curveball. Like, that's what I meant.
Yeah,
he kind of looks like that guy, not he's going to be that guy.
Right. And that's the deal with comps. You have to be careful how you use it. Visiting with Kylie McDaniel, as we get to Hagan Smith, I'm trying to remember. I've talked to a lot of scouts, not as many as you do. Little bit of Sale. I thought someone told me closest to Carlos Rodon when he was at that age. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is it Rodon, Sale, little combo there? Who am I missing in terms of comps since we're going to use them?
Yeah, Smith is actually kind of tricky because it's a lower slot, big stuff, lefty that has like no doubt can be a starter just in terms of what he's done and like the traits. And there's not that many guys like that, like, Bumgarner, but like the list of guys, it's like 5 to 10 guys long. in part because lower slot and big stuff and lefty and starter, each of those things on their own are pretty unique. Putting them all together, you end up getting a very short list of players. And obviously there is a risk, like there is with every young player, that if it is stuff with good enough command or control over command, which is to throw it over the plate but not always hit your spot, which is what Smith has right now, which is normal for his age, there is some risk he could be a reliever. And as a reliever, he would be, you know, fastball slider. There's a whole lot more power lefty relievers that are fastball slider types. There's way more of those guys. So that then gets you into the part where you could go Mike Stanton, you could go, you know, AJ Minter. Like, there's just tons and tons and tons of those guys. But when you're talking about the potential sort of upside as that sort of left-handed power starter, I mean, maybe throw Robbie Ray. Just the list of guys that have big stuff from the left side and don't throw from a high arm slot, it's a really short list of guys. So you have sort of a finite group of dudes that you can bring up. And again, you run into the problem where all the names you're saying are guys that have been like good big leaguers or multi all-stars. And you're like, well, we're not saying you should expect that, but like, he looks like those guys. So he certainly could do that.
All right. Speaking of what we can expect, what do you think we can expect in whatever amount of time he's going to be on a professional mound starting tonight? And one more question alongside that is, you mentioned like fastball slider, that makes a great reliever. So what does he need to do to sort of, is it the splitter? I think he's got a good one. Is it, what cut can he, I know he can cut the ball. What does he need to do to really expand that repertoire? But start with what we're going to see starting tonight.
Yeah, I would imagine it's going to be a shorter leash because of the time off that he's had. I imagine we're talking three innings, 50, 60 pitches, not knowing that for sure, but that's typically how this sort of thing works, to kind of onboard him and get him going. I would imagine that they will encourage him to throw more of those splitters, which, I mean, I saw him at Auburn this spring. I think he threw close to 100 pitches and threw like three splitters the entire game, which I think he struck out like 15 guys. Like, it's not like he needed to. Mm-hmm. But that's obviously something that you don't need in college or in the low minors, that you do need in the big leagues. And so it is smart for teams to encourage him to work on that. So I would imagine if he's going to throw 50, 60 pitches, normally we throw one or two splitters. I bet he throws like 8 to 10. Like, not a crazy amount, but let's get him used to doing it more often. Maybe force him to use it in some instances that he doesn't normally use it. The other part of it, and this came from Kyle Peterson and Chris Burke, college baseball sort of experts on ESPN, that brought this up in the draft, is they were talking to some of his coaches, and they were saying a version of what my scouting report said, which is his stuff plays really well in the strike zone, but he isn't always in the strike zone. And so in college, you can throw a good slider off the plate and get a swing and a miss. His stuff plays in the zone in a way better than you would expect. I mentioned earlier the Stuff Plus, that's kind of the shorthand for the algorithms that look at the stuff that you'll see on Baseball Savant, where it's like, oh, his fastball has 18 inches of lift and, you know, 6 inches of run to it. You can take those and make a basic or even a more advanced version of it, and they will model basically giving you the scouting grade that a scout would give you, grading the pitches. And in this case, the Stuff Plus numbers that the nerds would give you in the office are lower than what you see with your eyeball, what the scouts would give you, and mm-hmm. lower than what you would expect given the outcomes he gets. Now, there's a little bit of sort of mystery with lefties that stuff can play better because of deception and arm slot and angles and, you know, left on left and, you know, coming in from a lower slot from behind a lefty and things like that. There's some things you can't explain about lefties. So everyone understands that it will play better than the Stuff Plus models say. But the thing that sort of can't really be explained is if he's getting swings and misses out of the zone with the slider, sometimes guys will chase the fastball. In the big leagues, they probably won't. Is why is it playing so good in the zone in college and presumably in the lower minors? That's a little more of the unexplainable stuff about, you know, there's some tunneling, there's some deception, there's some pitch selection, there's some things like that, but he's a little more butcher than surgeon. You're hoping he can get a little closer to that surgeon in terms of the precision, and that's sort of a normal path that guys like this at this age will take.
Excellent stuff. Last thing I have for you, I would assume talent-wise, especially with the White Sox and where they are in their cycle, he could probably make the team out of spring training. But is it probably more like treat him like Paul Skeens or even slower than that when it comes to 2025?
Yeah, he's going to be another issue where you're hoping that Hagen Smith can be a 180-inning big league starter. He threw 84 innings in college this year, so he's going to be at, I would imagine, about 100 for the year. So you probably want to cap him around 130, maybe 150 next year. So he's not going to be able to pitch, you know, 32 starts as deep as you want him to go every time. So that then gets you into the Skeens territory where what Pittsburgh does was, oh, well, we'd like to optimistically think that we'll be in the playoff run, or that the games later in the season are more important than the ones earlier in the season. So let's start him slow, go an inning or two, maybe three for the first month, 6 weeks of the season. Then we can let him go full bore the second half and still get him to that innings limit. That also has some, you know, some service time implications as well. Usually not enormous ones, but it'll probably save you a little bit of money if you do that. Also, I don't think we're expecting the White Sox to maybe win the division next year. So that's not the most important time to be burning some of his 6+ years. So, I would imagine if he stays healthy and continues to throw the splitter and throw strikes and it sort of progresses in a way that is expected, I would imagine around, May, June of next year is when that conversation is starting to open up, where he's starting to go 4 or 5 innings at a time. He's in AA or AAA, and you can start deciding, how do you want this to unfold, as opposed to, like, is he ready? Like, he might technically be ready now, but when is it reasonable for him to come up? I think as we get into the summer or late spring of next year is when that's a real conversation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the White Sox do have some arms. I know they're a long way from winning, but they do have some arms. So something to at least keep an eye on as they head to 2025. Kylie, thank you so much for your time. Get back to your, not the beach, the hammock, I guess.
I was also about to walk my dogs. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. That's Kylie McDaniel, our prospects guru at ESPN. Check out his stuff at ESPN.com. He does all the prospect rankings, team farm systems. He's amazing. Join us on September 14th for Sox Crawl halfway to St. Paddy's Day, presented by Miller Lite. Enjoy a pregame crawl inside the stadium with happy hour specials on classic ballpark food and drink, entertainment, and more. Plus, receive a White Sox rugby shirt and Sox Crawl hat. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/soxcrawl. We'll come back and hear from Brian Bannister, director of pitching, as we continue this sort of conversation surrounding Hagen Smith, who makes his pro debut tonight. And, of course, at the top of the hour, you will hear in its entirety Chris Getz meeting with reporters yesterday before the series opener against the Tigers. That's all coming up on White Sox Weekly. My name is Jesse Rogers, filling in for Connor McKnight on the White Sox Radio Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Okay, let's continue with this pitching conversation as Brian Bannister, the director of pitching for the White Sox, had a conversation with DJ and Connor McKnight out west in San Francisco. That happened earlier in the week. So here's Brian Bannister with the guys.
Brian Bannister, the senior advisor to White Sox pitching, in the booth with us. Brian, thanks so much for hanging out. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, good to be here.
Well, it's great timing. We just saw Davis Martin strike out the side, and he's part of your responsibilities here. He's looked great coming back from Tommy John.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. He's a great personality. The thing I love is in spring training came up, and he's like, what do you got for me? He's like, I'm trying to make it. I want to be a big leaguer. And just always a smile on his face, and he's got some nasty stuff, can really spin the ball. And we were working on a changeup last week in Oakland, and it's really taking off right now.
Ryan, you find yourself around the big league club enough during the season to where you feel like you can make an impact, or is it more you're visiting the minor league teams a lot?
You know, Ethan Katz and I were locker mates in 2020 here during COVID, and we spent a lot of time together, probably too much time, but we have a great relationship and good communication. That's the foundation of everything we do.
The first pitch to Corey Lee outside on a curveball, 1-0.
So you're here now. You were in Oakland. You're a Northern Cal guy, so it's convenient. How many times have you been to Chicago putting the work in with the team?
1-0 check swing upstairs, 2-0.
I try to get there once or twice a month, and strategically for the draft, for working with certain pitchers, but looking at the macro calendar, taking the long view, and really trying to be strategic.
2-0, swing and a miss, 2-1. You know, looking through the system, the pitching is really kind of the heralded part of the White Sox organization right now. Are there spots that you'd point fans to that maybe have really stood out this year? Here's a 2-1, swung on a miss, 2-2.
We have a lot of young arms that, frankly, haven't had a long minor league runway, and they're coming up here and holding their own. When you see a young guy putting up a 4 ERA or an ERA in the threes and throwing 6-7 innings, that's all you can ask for in a first year, and it's something to build on. They figure out their routines, the travel, the stadiums, their arsenals, not tipping, things like that, and they've done well.
2-2 from Ray, swing and a miss on a slider. One, two, three inning.
You're not going anywhere.
Starter.
You're stuck here for another half inning, so hang out.
Nobody's made the move to the pen yet. Brian Bannister back with us.
I got a question for you, Brian. Now, you mentioned the little tweak you made with Davis. Are you more about a system to pitching, or are you more about each individual and making them the best that they can be?
Taking their attributes, their strengths, leveraging those, trying to avoid the weaknesses, and just give the hitters a different look.
Give us more, a different look.
The league has done a good job of maximizing velo, whether that's throwing less pitches, you know, tech, biomechanics. And so we're trying to give them something they haven't seen before. And you look across the whole pitcher universe, everybody's out there, something funky, something that moves different, something that plays off each other. And so you know, this changeup he's throwing right now is definitely unique. And you see Crochet with his velo, that power cutter. Fetty had the seam effects, the seam shift awake, the seam orientation stuff. So he was a nice guy to find coming back from Korea. Got him on a reasonable contract, was able to trade him at the deadline. But he was a fun guy and really overhauled how he pitched, and that's what we're looking for.
Do you find pitchers are maybe more amenable to change what they're doing because of the way we can measure and check their stuff with all the technology?
It's more objective now. It's less voodoo, less like, what are you doing to me? And they see pitchers all around them getting better, and they want a piece of the action too.
What if a guy's resistant? If you come against a guy that's got talent, but you see something that can help them be a little bit better and he's resistant to change, what do you guys, how do you deal with that?
I call it waiting until the soil is fertile, and usually that means waiting for a period of failure where the pitcher isn't getting results, and he comes up to you one day and he's like, what do you got for me? It's just being prepared in that moment.
Nice.
You know, we look around this game. The other side of this is the hitting, right? Offense down this year. How much of that is just velocity, I wonder? It feels like, you know, to me, outside looking in, 90%.
Yeah, there's a lot of velo in the game. We're really getting good at optimizing these pitchers just because everything we can do under the microscope now and make them as nasty as possible.
Well, I mean, you had a nice career in the big leagues. Obviously, the lineage, your father was a great pitcher in the big leagues. So you are a baseball player. But when you were playing, did you feel like you always had teaching in your future?
I did. I was around the Zach Greinke's of the world early on, and I always loved the intellectual side of the game because I wasn't the most talented.
Tell me how hard it is for a pitcher like Davis, and not Davis in particular because he's such a great dude, to get over the actual misplay, to not let that affect what you're trying to do out there.
I think you go back, did you control what you control? Did you execute your pitch to the zone, to the scouting report? Baseball, the ball is going to spray. You know, they're still going to get a hit 3 out of 10 times on a ball in play. I always joke that pitching's like playing golf, except right in front of the hole when you're trying to putt, there's a guy with a bat trying to whack it. You can only control the putt.
I think I might 3-putt less, though, with that kind of pressure, to be honest with you. I don't want to wait up there and putt with a guy swinging a bat at me.
Yeah, you can't blame yourself. You blame the guy with the bat.
That's right.
Yeah, I've always felt, Brian, that the real fun side of this game is the intellectual side, the thinking, the outsmarting the opponent rather than just the raw talent, which when you have that combination of talent and the intelligence, that's great. But, you know, I was similar to you. I had to use my brain to try and be successful against great pitchers. Otherwise, I had no chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I always found hard, though? Trying to think along with a pitcher when I was hitting that wasn't out there thinking. He was just going, okay, here's a fastball. Like he called for, trying to think along with guys like that, I had no chance. Now, I don't know about when you were pitching, if all of a sudden you're looking in going, how do I pitch this guy? He's nobody special, but he's not thinking up there. He's just standing there reacting.
We actually went through a fun experiment here with the Giants. We hired the Stanford Computer Science Department to create an algorithm to randomly generate sequences of pitches. and we were very close to implementing it. It was a fun project and dealt with people way smarter than me.
That's awesome.
Well, the Stanford computer, you couldn't get a good computer department in, or Stanford was the only one that took the call?
They were pretty smart. It was more the implementation of it. It got a little tricky, but you know those ideas teams are throwing out around the league.
What's something that you'd like to see, or a way you'd like to see broadcasts talk about pitching that would get us more up to date with the way teams are thinking about things?
I would like to see fans be able to participate in kind of the nuances that we look at on a daily basis. And the reason is we're out there with high-speed cameras. We're out there with Doppler radars. And our whole battleground is under a microscopic level. And when you're sitting upper deck and holding a beer and watching the game, you don't get to appreciate everything a pitcher's put in and the uniqueness of his talent and some way to loop the fans in the way that we see it on the iPads in the dugout, and we're looking at it analytically. I think it would really bring the next generation of kids who watch YouTube and things like that into the game of baseball.
Hey, I think baseball is open to suggestions. Maybe you should have a little input in that with the MLB.
Yeah, I'd rather see it go that direction than the gambling direction and, yeah. and the fantasy baseball stuff.
Yeah, I hear you there.
All right, that was Brian Bannister earlier in the week. No, the Sox game has not started. That's from earlier in the week when he was in the booth with Connor McKnight and Darren Jackson. I thought that was interesting, especially after talking to Kylie McDaniel about our about Hagen Smith's debut. So good pitching half hour of talk there on White Sox Weekly. And coming up next, you're going to hear from Chris Getz. But first, let's pause 10 seconds for station ID.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Jesse Rogers back with you on White Sox Weekly, filling in for Connor McKnight. He'll be in the booth with Len Casper tonight. Game 2, White Sox and Tigers. Got another half hour before we hand it off to the pregame show. Coming up next, in its entirety, uncut, unedited, Chris Getz, the GM of the White Sox, his conversation with reporters yesterday covering a myriad of topics from Hagen Smith's debut to the managerial search. That's coming up next on White Sox Weekly. Stay tuned.
Waddle and Sylvie, 2:30 to 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Jesse Rogers sitting in. And as promised throughout the afternoon, we are going to let you listen in on Chris Getz, his little press conference he had with reporters before game one of the series against the Tigers. That came yesterday afternoon. Getz addressing a whole host of topics, including Hagen Smith's debut tonight, and of course, the managerial search as well. Here's Getz with reporters from Friday afternoon.
What have you learned from Brady that you didn't know before you went on the Charger?
You know, one of the things that Grady does so well, the ease that, you know, that he has just with people in general, he's one that can take what many would make a complex issue and simplify it. Just kind of speaks to his confidence, his ability to, you know, communicate in an effective manner. So I knew he had that talent in him, but to see him go to work with it has been enjoyable. And you know, it's really motivated the staff around him. You know, I look into the dugout and, you know, they're all working together to make decisions on the field. So it's very refreshing to see. And I think that players have responded pretty well. There's been plenty of positive takeaways, you know, in this past road trip and look forward to this homestand now. And hopefully we can grab some positives as well.
Do you have injury updates on Moncada, Leisure, and Thorpe? Do you expect any of them to play in September for you?
Yes, we do. Moncada is starting a rehab assignment next week in Charlotte. So he'll travel Sunday, and plan is for him to play on Tuesday. Soroka through live today, and that went well. He'll be heading to Charlotte as well. Thorpe and Leisure have another side, and then, you know, we'll move forward from there. Yeah, so very encouraging on those guys, and I look forward to having them back with our club.
You got to be cautious, obviously, on everyone, but Thorpe and Leisure have been pretty good rookie seasons overall, put in some work. Are you cognizant of that, too?
We are. Yeah, we're not going to push them to the point where we risk long-term health. There's just no need to do that at this point, but they're responding really well. They've been diligent with their rehab, and our staff has done a nice job, too. But we feel like they're close to making the next step.
Similar vein with Edgar Caro down in Charlotte, kind of that he's dealing with the back thing right now. What's kind of the projection on that, and does that affect kind of the calculus of considering, you know, adding to his workload at the end of the year?
Edgar's due to be back pretty shortly. And, you know, his back has been a little bit tight, but it seems to be getting better daily. You know, he's a switch hitter, so you want to make sure he feels strong on both sides, and certainly, you know, when he's squatting behind the plate. But he's had a tremendous year. And he's a big part of our future. So, you know, we're certainly not going to push him to the point where we'll also put him in harm's way for the sake of, you know, to help our major league club or anything like that. He is under consideration, but we want to make sure he's healthy, and, you know, we'll make a decision from there.
What does it mean to have Hagen Smith pick that next step on Saturday?
Yeah, Hagen, he's pitching tomorrow. We're obviously very excited about watching him make his debut at High A Winston-Salem. So, you know, he's pitched well out in Arizona, obviously against different type of competition, and now to get a you know, his first affiliated game under his belt, you know, it's a big moment for our scouting group, our front office, and hopefully our fans as well, to get a glimpse of what Hagen can do at Winston.
With all these young pitchers that you have on your roster that you're using, are you concerned at all that they're not getting offensive relief, that they have to have stress innings all the time because they're not getting the offense to help support them?
Well, from a starting standpoint, you know, it's not too concerning considering their, you know, we're very mindful of their workload in general, with where they're at in their career. I think from when it comes to relievers, from time to time, they can be maybe used more often than you would like, just because they're so talented and you want them to be in games and leverage moments as much as you can. So, you know, it's kind of part of the calculation on who's going to be available and who's throwing when and where. And offense is obviously a big key to a team's success, and it plays into you know, long-term health throughout a season. So, you know, we definitely need to improve on the offensive part. You know, one piece is to help kind of balance out our pitching staff. So that's part of what we're focused on moving forward, is in increasing our offense to be able to complement our pitchers.
Do you see Colson coming up in September?
I haven't made that decision yet. You know, he's still working hard down in Charlotte. We're still looking for a little bit more consistency in the bat. There have been some positive signs along the way, but most importantly, we need to make sure that he's foundationally a good spot before we challenge him at the major league level.
If he doesn't come up, it doesn't preclude him from having a chance to break with the team next year out of camp, right? I mean, he doesn't have to have that next natural step. He could break with the team just as easily.
Yeah, he could. You know, we just want him to go out there and finish strong whether it's down in Charlotte or with our major league club, and then we'll go into 2025 and see what's best for Colson.
Where in the process are you with the managerial search at this point?
You know, we're still getting organized, you know, building our criteria that we're looking for. Obviously, names come in left and right to various people throughout the organization, and we want to make sure we want to put pen to paper on what the attributes are going to be for our future manager, and then we'll go out and target those individuals. So, you know, we're still building the process and look forward to getting into it more in September and October.
Do you think interviews will start to happen in September? How will that work?
It's possible. Okay. You know, you're at the mercy of other clubs and very sensitive to their situations, whether in a playoff hunt or needing to get to the finish line. You know, we want to get started when the appropriate time is for the White Sox, but in regards to the right timetable, there are some variables we won't have control over.
You've mentioned a couple times how the pitching infrastructure here is pretty good and you want to work on the hitting infrastructure. You just mentioned it again there. Is that one of the attributes you're putting down in terms of a manager, some sort of hitting experience, background, anything like that, more so than pitching?
It's possible, okay. You know, to find a, you know, force multiplier, right? An individual that could help in an area that's, you know, really needed in an organization could be a factor for us. But we're still building that out, and, you know, you certainly don't want to force yourself into a decision just to, you know, check one box, so to speak. So, you know, there's going to be a wide range of candidates. And hopefully we can check all the boxes that are needed for this organization.
Look at the offense, how it's struggled this year. Do you point to one thing? Is it several factors? Why do you think the offense is struggling like it has this year?
There's a lot of different factors that go into it, and I will say it's a theme across the league with conversations I've had, and obviously a deeper dive as well, just offense being down. However, we've been at the bottom. So, you know, some of it's personnel-based, some of it's, you know, more of a physical or an approach-based issue. And you know, we've got people in town right now that we're going to dive into a plan for building out the proper infrastructure, not only in hitting but other areas as well. But it is a primary focus for us.
Garrett, still, the plan is every 5 days, 6 days, whatever it is, and just keep his – watch his limit pitch-wise and innings-wise?
We're still going to, you know, start. You got to evaluate how each outing goes, and we've got different ways to get feedback, how he's physically holding up, and, you know, the pitch quality. And he's, you know, remained very strong. I think anyone who watches the games can would attest to that. So, but I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. There's no need to do that. I just know that, you know, he pitched well in San Fran, and we'll see how he recovers until his next start.
When you acquire Miguel Vargas, obviously it's a, you know, long-term acquisition, but what has struck you about him not being able to get on track early on, and how do you kind of want to use him, given the, you know, the initial idea was to play him every day and see how he can come along?
Yeah, there's certainly an element of just exposure to a new organization for a young player that sometimes just takes time for him to get comfortable. He's learning us, we're learning him. I think the you know, the biggest positive here is we've got this window of time for him to, you know, build these relationships and trust along the way. And, you know, we've got at-bats to give him. We've been impressed with how he's handled third base. You know, he's got history in other positions as well, but the exposure at third base has been positive for us. Obviously, he's a guy that's going to show up and continue to work, and he responds really well to instruction. He's a great kid, very talented. You look at, you know, what he's accomplished in his minor league career, and we've got playing time to give him to see how he responds to that, but we're here to encourage him. You know, he's a part of our future. We've got time with Miguel Vargas to develop him here up at the major league level, and we're committed to him.
As you guys put together your off-season plan, is a lot of that going to be like the farm system's improved, the future's bright, or we got to do everything we can to avoid a repeat of this season?
You know, it starts with focusing on, you know, infrastructure, and you look at different departments and certain areas of the organization that need attention and focus. You know, it's the farm system is an indication of something that is an indicator that we're heading in the right direction. You look at, you know, some of the rankings and how, you know, whether it be publications or other organizations value your players. Obviously, there's more to it than just farm system rankings. We feel very good about where we are from the pitching standpoint, starting pitching standpoint. What Brian Bannister has done and Ethan Katz and others throughout the organization that have put us in a pretty solid position. We got Hagen pitching tomorrow, which is an exciting moment for us. And now we've got to, you know, really, you know, put our minds together and put a plan together to improve us in all facets of the organization. We know there will be no shortcuts along the way. We're just committed to doing what's right for us long term. And we've got to stay the course and not cave based on pressures or noise outside of the organization and do what's right for us so we can be successful in the future.
You alluded to wanting to get more out of internationally in terms of scouting. Do you have kind of a vision of what will be the steps to make that, you know, really happen or take a step forward?
Well, we're in the process of, you know, improving our academies, our academy down in the Dominican Republic. We've put a lot of work in terms of research into locations and you know, we plan on, you know, focusing there even more here in the coming months to find a facility that's going to be, you know, advantageous for us. And then we'll continue to modernize our international process. So that's definitely an area that remains a focus for us.
Have you seen a different baseball overall under Grady? Different demeanor from the team, so to speak? I know you comment on what he's done and how it's inspired the staff. What about the team overall?
No, I think the players, when you look at, you know, how we played our last game in San Francisco and the fight that we've shown in a majority of these games, obviously the outcome hasn't always come in a win, but the style of or the defensive plays that have made, our bullpen and how they've responded in certain moments and putting together runs late in game was something that we were struggling to do, and I think that's a testament to Grady and the staff and the environment they've created.
You think the sort of elephant in the room with the record amount of losses potentially, I'm curious if you think it should be more of an internal motivation, player by player, instead of like a team wide, like you'd be holding meetings about or something. Just like this should be everybody's motivation to just try to win as many as we can.
Well,
down the
you track. Know, Grady's said this message, and I have as well. There's always something to play for, and something that, and most often you're going to get the best version of yourself as a player when you're playing for something beyond just your name. And whether that they're choosing to you know, avoid a a certain record or playing for a teammate or playing for the White Sox, playing for the fans, whatever it is, that's up to each individual. And hopefully they choose something that motivates them to go out there and perform on a nightly basis. When it comes to wins and losses, there's so much that goes into it. You know, you've got all the players in the starting lineup. You've got a bench. You've got a bullpen. You've got your starter that night. And, you know, you just hope that everyone comes together and you know, unified to go out there and win a ball game. You can't get ahead of yourself in this game. You can't get ahead of yourself in professional sports or really in anything you do. You got to focus what's how you're going to put yourself in a good position to help the team that night, and you hope that a win comes out of it. And, you know, however you find that motivation is up to you. But I'm very confident that if you're just playing for yourself, you're not going to get the best version. If you're playing for something other than yourself, you've got a chance to really do something that perhaps better than the first selfish player.
You feel like maybe that's the perception that the one player has to try to arrest the, you know, the fall and the struggle. Do you think it's had a negative effect, especially offensively, in terms of, like, not be able to pass the baton to the next guy because the offense has been struggling? When you're evaluating individual hitters, do you have to factor in, like, the struggles that the team has had, maybe having a carryover effect?
I do believe that hitting can be contagious. And, you know, when now it can be sparked fairly easily at times. And it could be one player that, you know, has a great night and you know, you watch him go out there and the intent that he has, and it has an effect on the guy hitting, you know, behind him or in front of him. So I think that that's a motivator to show up each day, knowing that there, you know, we might find the spark to get us going. Now, you know, everyone's got a job to do in the box, and there are a long list of situations that happen in a game each night, and whether it be the 0-0 count, a 1-0 count, 2-0 count, 3-1 count, on how you attack a pitcher. Those are situations that you need to be aware of and put the proper approach to be successful in that moment. And then if you reach first base, your job is to, if you're a base stealer, get in the position to get to second base, whether it be a stolen base or a ball in the dirt, you know, what have you. And if the pitcher's going to dictate, you know, your ability to steal that base. And if you don't run, that's a good decision, because if it's a, you know, a guy that's, you know, 1-3 or quicker, you're going to have a tough time stealing that base. If he's a 1-4 or slower, that's an opportunity to take that base. And that's a job, that's a situation that pops up, and you need to take advantage of that. And you stack up all those decisions throughout a game. And as a player, you go back to the locker room, you go through, you reflect on that game. Did I do everything I can to help this club win that night? Did I make good decisions? And if you've got a clubhouse full of players that make good decisions on a daily night or on a daily basis, you're going to have a better chance of success. So, you know, it's players understanding that, it's coaches conveying that message, and for me as a general manager, it's to be able to create that environment that is preached not only up at the major league level but throughout the minor leagues.
So that was Chris Getz. A lot to digest there, but we're going to wrap things up here on White Sox Weekly in just a moment. This is the White Sox Radio Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, a hot dog, a drink, a bag of chips, plus a cookie. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. All right, that's going to do it for me, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show. Appreciate you listening. We've got White Sox baseball coming up next. Brendan Riley has the pregame show. Want to thank him for holding my hand throughout this White Sox Weekly episode here on this Saturday afternoon. We bring it to you every Saturday. Connor will be back next weekend. Thanks to Kevin Zipak and Matt McMaster as well. Really appreciate it, guys. Have a great rest of your weekend. Sox and Tigers coming up next on the White Sox Radio Network.